Coming to you live from the basement of an abandoned training facility where we talk about fighting, training, and events. It's the Fight Mixer Show, where you can hear about all the local and world combat sports happenings. Get ready. It's time to gear up and square up because we're going live on the Fight Mixer Show.
Happy Thursday, mofos. Welcome to the Fight Mixer. Mr. Gabe, what's going on, brother?
Man, good. Just, you know, enjoying the day. No non-audio problems. So I'm buffing it.
Yep. After the last episode, we've done advancements in our production value tenfold. So
yeah, we threw like $7.26 at it, and look what we got out of it. Boom.
Unbelievable, man. That last episode, last episode with Shawnee Carter, we want to apologize for. We are so sorry from the bottom of our hearts and bottom of our asses. We are so sorry about that episode.
The problem was Shawnee and I were using the same dial-up connection.
Right. AOL, were you guys using Windows 98 or like AOL? Like what were you guys using?
Oh, 97.
Dude, it's been a crazy week. Last weekend was UFC Fight Night with Colby Covington pulling up a big win against Tyron Woodley. Did you see that fight?
I did, actually. Well, I slept through a portion of it. It was not the most exciting fight, but you know what? It was kind of how I expected it to go. There's no denying that Colby's tough. I think his upcoming fight with LeBron James should be interesting.
you know, I'm shaking my head, right? Like, oh my God, that call out at the end, like, and I like Colby Covington. I've had him on my podcast. He's a great guy. I know. You know, different strokes for different folks. Yeah. But, like, fuck, man, he went into – if you guys missed the fights, he went into full-on character, called out LeBron James, fucking Black Lives Matter. He called out every fucking person on the planet except Donald Trump. And then as soon as Donald Trump called, it looked like he discovered his first boner. Like, I never seen him just, like, light up with joy. Like, it seemed like he broke character just to talk to Donald Trump. But, like, why would you call out fucking LeBron James? Like, come on, man.
That was actually exceptional because LeBron James is talking about him and now he's getting mainstream media attention. I actually felt like that was a brilliant tactic.
Yeah, but it also could be like the wrong attention. And by the way, Gabe, happy birthday to your daughter. She turns one. Congratulations. Happy birthday, sir.
Valkyrie just walked in the door right now and she appreciates the happy birthdays.
Yeah, but you know, it's the wrong kind of attention, though. And my biggest complaint with it, too, is, one, Colby Covington is not like that in real life. Hello! That's Gabe's daughter.
Look at that.
The next Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, y'all. The next killer.
That's right. Yep. Absolutely killer. But I thought, as far as the mainstream media attention, it was brilliant.
So this is my biggest problem too. Like Israeli Azalea, like he's fighting this weekend. He made comments about like he's gonna knock that guy down like the Twin Towers. People had a big problem with it, and people went crazy about that. Like how Israel, he said, that. "Oh, I'm not." Yeah, he said, "I'm gonna knock that guy down like the Twin Towers." Everyone had a big problem with it. Colby Covington goes after Black Lives Matter, LeBron James, everything like that. Nobody has a problem with it. Nobody. Like, I have a problem with that, and I like Kobe. You know, I think it's the wrong kind of attention. It makes our sport seems it brings the wrong kind of attention, you know? Like, it makes our sport look ignorant. You know what I'm saying?
It is. You do realize it is, right?
It's completely
Tito Ortiz was a champion once. Yeah. UFC champion. Like, I don't need to say any more than that.
But still, man, I don't know. I think unnecessary, man. Unnecessary. Completely fucking unnecessary. So what's the next matchup for Kobe?
I didn't hear about the Adesanya comment. People have their decisions of what they get mad about and what they don't get mad about. You know what I mean? And I'm sorry. What was your question about Kobe?
So what's the next matchup for him? Like, well, where does he go from here?
That Chimaev kid, the one that everyone's like all have is like a like double boner for. I want to see him versus Kobe. I don't know his name. But like everyone's got this hard on for him. Like they say he's Khabib 2.0. If he beats Maya, he should fight Kobe.
Maya's going to be the gatekeeper for that division, and he's going to plow right through Maya. And that guy is so hyped right now. Like, Dana White literally has the biggest hard-on for this one fucking guy. And after his last win, he looked absolutely fucking devastating. He looked like a world beater. You know, I think he's going to be something special.
It's hard to gauge, right? A 17-second knockout, as impressive as that is, it's hard to gauge. I think the Damian Maia fight is going to be the telling fight. If he goes through Damian Maia, and no one goes through Damian Maia, Damian Maia gets beat, but no one goes through him. If he goes through Damian Maia, he's the real deal.
And you have to keep in mind, too, Damian Maia is super dangerous on the ground. He tapped out Ben Askren. He's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. So he's a serious fucking jiu-jitsu practitioner. And Kamzat is actually a blue belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So this is where things get really interesting. Like, if you could place it together, Gabe, like, do you think, you know, he plows through Maya, gets to the contenders, or, you know, do you think he's going to have some trouble with Maya?
Well, Damian Maia is a gangster. And, like, you know, for me as a jiu-jitsu guy, I think he's amazing. I don't know enough about Kazamat. To make a decision about that, but I will say if he does plow through him, you need to give him a contender and really build him. I think Kobe would be the perfect matchup.
Kobe's a dangerous fighter, though. Kobe's a dangerous fighter.
But that's exactly what I'm saying. If you want to look all the hype on this guy, if he blows through Damian Maia, you give him Kobe Covington. Now you have your next contender for 170. Kobe. Is he the next 70-pound contender? I mean, he just went through Woodley, yeah, but I don't know where everyone else ranks. You know, you have Gilbert Burns, who's the number two, who's in line, right? I think Woodley was the number three. So if this Kazamat guy is as badass as everyone's saying is, have him fight Colby for number one contender.
Did you see how much shit fucking Kobe was saying to Usman after the fight, like in their post-fight speech? Did you see that?
I did not. I was still waking up. The fourth round, I took a long nap, and you know, then my daughter started poking me. I think it's over, Daddy. I think it's over. She's one. She barely talks, but that's what she said. So,
her first words.
They picked up right where they left off too. Like, they picked up right where they left off. Like, Kobe was saying, oh, I got that dragon energy. I'm going to fucking smash you now. And all Usman was saying, dude, I broke your face. And these guys were arguing back and forth. And, you know, it was pretty crazy.
Well, you can say whatever you want, but Usman, when everything is said and done, he did break his face and he beat his ass and made him run out like a little bitch. Like, really, like, dude, you can say whatever you want. Like, When push came to shove, he got his shit pushed in and ran away like a baby. Like, dude, I'm sorry. Like, if I was Usman, that would be my comeback every time. That, like, I have nothing else to say to you. smashed your face and cried like a baby. I'm done, son.
I want to see Mazidov fight fucking Kobe Covington because they used to be best friends. They used to be BFFs. They train at American Top Team. Something happened. There was a beef between them. I want to see that fight.
I think it's a good fight, but I think Colby with his wrestling can always make it a boring fight. And like, as gangster as Masvidal is, look at his losses. Look who beats him. Wrestlers beat him. He loses to guys that he should never ever lose to, but he loses because of takedowns.
Right. Not necessarily. My friend Ben Askren tried playing that game and he caught a knee right to the dome.
Dude, Ben Askren had the worst single takedown that of all time, to a point where high school wrestlers were hitting me up like, what the flying fuck was that? and I don't know. I don't know what that was. Like, dude, it was like he ran in like a zombie like this. And I don't know if he was just trying to play with them or what, but dude, it was one, the worst game planning I've ever seen. Like hands up, like just the worst. And like that okay, but okay, all that aside, Colby's not going to run in there like that and give Maz he respects Masvidal enough to just do that.
Right. But also Khamzat has been fighting in the middleweight division. So is he gonna drop back down to welterweight to fight Colby? Like Khamzat has been extremely successful in the middleweight division. I think personally he's gonna have a lot of success in the middleweight division, especially, you know, I don't know how he's gonna do against like Israeli and Costa, who's fighting for the championship this weekend, but right now he's in middleweight and he's doing a great job. He's doing a fantastic job in middleweight. So why drop down and fucking try to fight Colby?
He's playing both weight classes. And the thing's, I'm thinking he's probably a natural 190 pounder.
Right.
Right? Or like maybe maybe. Like 70 should be his weight class. Like if you can do both weight classes, the thing is, if you're an 85er, you probably walk around 215.
Right.
Like realistically. Like, dude, that Israel guy, or I'm sorry, who's the guy Israel's fighting? What's his name?
Costa.
Yeah. Dude, Costa was in LA about 4 months ago. He looked like he was 240. Easy. Monster.
That guy looks like a fucking Mark Kerr. And the fact is, he's natural. He looks like a Mark Kerr during the days where if you piss hot iron, you're going to get fucking. You really think? Don't even suggest that. Watch the dirty mouth, sir. No way. You think he's avoided? You think he's dabbling? No way.
I mean, I don't know. I you know, if it quacks, it might be a duck. It might be a duck.
He's never pissed hot though. He's never pissed hot though.
Okay.
He looks fucking okay. Scary.
Hold on. You know when Barry Bonds got caught for steroids? You know how he got caught?
How'd he get caught?
He didn't piss hot ever.
Really?
They raided the lab. They do a specific type of steroids which like goes along with your body. I'm trying to think of what they call it.
Estrogen blockers, right? Like
a designer steroid. They found his name on the books.
Wow.
So the reason why he got busted is they raided the lab he was working or that he was going to and found his name's on the books.
Right.
I'm just saying, the Tour de France get tested more than anybody. More than anybody. And those guys are through the roof, and they may not look all big and strong like Costa, but they are doing stuff.
Right.
And there are ways there are ways around everything.
Right. Well,
I can tell you.
I'm sorry. What were you saying? I'm sorry.
I will never ever sell this person out, but I know someone who fought for the heavyweight title. And he used a fake penis to do his piss test. And that was how he did not get caught, because he was roided to the gills.
Josh Barnett. No way. Not Josh, right? No way.
No, Josh gets caught, so no.
Yeah, Josh got caught. But who could it be? No, okay, just say if I'm hot or cold, okay? Let's play a little game, right? Oh, come on, Gabe, come on.
I can give you just the weight class.
Okay.
But outside that, he used a fake wiener to piss, and he's never pissed hot.
What year did he last fight?
What are you drinking there? Is that what? Apple juice?
Do not change the subject. When was the last time he fought with a fake dick?
What
Tell
is
me,
that?
Gabe.
I don't know the last time he fought with a fake dick. The last time he fought with a fake dick? I'm not sure.
When did you find this out, Gabe? What are you concealing from us? Come on, tell us. Come on. Give me like a little hint.
I will tell you this. There are many, many people that I know for a fact that have not pissed hot that I know use.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, I don't want to blow anybody's spot, you know.
Now I'm not saying that Cost is using. I'm just saying it's possible.
All right, so at least like sprinkle some breadcrumbs, like hints towards the fake dick. Like, what's the background telling of his name?
Why?
Because this is hilarious. Wait, what?
Why are you so into fake dicks?
No, I'm just saying, like, this is like a crazy story, man. I gotta know the heavyweight. Can you tell me off air though? I promise I won't tell. Scout's honor.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Were you a scout?
No.
Then what the fuck? You can't do scout's honor if you weren't a scout.
All right, facts. Okay, true. Okay, fair enough. By the way, like, speaking of Mark Kerr, like watching that documentary, The Smashing Machine, literally killed my childhood. Did you ever see that documentary?
It's sad. Yeah.
If anybody is into mixed martial arts, like way back in the day, watch The Smashing Machine. It was this great HBO documentary. And I always thought Mark Kerr as this fucking world beater. He was at one point the top heavyweight in the world. He was an NCAA wrestler, an incredible athlete, like a superhuman athlete. And, you know, I always thought, just like boxing, everybody's clean. I kind of burst in my bubble like Gabe usually does. I know you're looking at me crazy, but you lived through this. Think of me as like a little kid. I didn't think anybody was like doing fucking steroids in MMA. I thought it was like a sanctioned sport, just like, you know, like boxing and everything like that. But when I saw a documentary and I saw the rise of Mark Kerr and the fall and like the steroids and the steroid usage and the fact that he trained with Boss Rutten and Rico and like all these great guys, that was crazy, man. I don't know why anybody would fucking dabble with like any type of steroids or performance enhancer. Like, it's like a slippery slope, you know. It's just,
what do you mean? Why do you mean? What do you mean? Why would they do it? Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
performance. But, they're performance enhancing. What do you mean? Why? That's the whole idea is to be a little bit faster, a little bit stronger, be able to train a little bit more. There's so much benefit from it. And I'll be honest, I think we should have an all steroid league. I want the biggest and baddest dudes out there trying to kill each other. I'm sorry. Let's see it.
No, but from an athletic standpoint, but from like your heart and from your balls, I mean, it shrinks your balls, kills your heart. You know, people in the WWF back in the day always took steroids and they die in their 40s and 50s. Like, I'm not talking from a performance standpoint.
Well, but those guys were also living a hard life. If you're doing steroids and doing freaking horse tranquilizers and drinking, you know, as much as you're drinking, dude, have you ever watched any like the Andre the Giant documentary?
Yeah,
dude, Andre the Giant. Now steroids never came up, but he would, just his drinking alone should have killed him.
Well, he was doing that to tranquilize the pain. Like, he was drinking because with his size and his mass, he was always in pain. And taking those bumps in the ring, I know people, like, you know, hate on pro wrestling, but those bumps are very, very real. Those hits are very, very real. And for Andre the Giant, you know, he had this disease, you know, and it was killing his body. And those bumps, and later in his career, he did not take any bumps whatsoever because his knees were bad. He had to do surgery in his knees, yeah. and he would drink cases of beer just to numb his pain. Like, it got really fucking bad for Andre the Giant. That's a great subject that you brought up. Crazy.
Well, but I'm saying that, listen, if you abuse anything, there are going to be bad side effects, right? There's going to be something, you give something to get something, right?
Right.
I think in the athletic world, it's always been there. It has always been there. And people, here's the thing about the steroid conflict. It's going to always be there. And as the testing happens, people are going to find ways to get around the tests. And that's just how it works. That's the nature of things, right? The evolution of things. Like, they're going to find out tests to figure it out, and people are going to change it up. And growth hormone used to be the big one. Now they can test for growth, and EPO used to be another one. And now they, like, so there's always going to be a way around it. As a matter of fact, I remember one fighter would withdraw blood, have it oxygenated, and then put back in after weigh-ins. So he had more oxygenated red blood cells in his system. So he has a gas tank forever. That's right. Basically like the way before EPO became a drug, that was the way that they would do it.
Yeah.
And that's a blood doping. That's a way of doing blood doping, which is 100% illegal, but that was something that was done.
I know Japan and Pride, they're very lenient about, they're very, very lenient about steroid testing and all that fun stuff. I mean, look at Wanderlei Silva in Pride, and then look at him when he came to the UFC. Obviously way different, but like when you fought for the UFC, were drug tests strict? Was it kind of like lenient as Pride, or what was it like?
I think I fought UFC 63. I think we did do a piss test. I mean, I have to say now, like the you know, when they can pull you to do a test whenever is much different than when I was in. But you got tested every night. Like I believe after you fought.
Right. But was it tested through the UFC? Because, you know, for their big stars, nobody wants to risk their big stars. Did they ever, were they very lenient towards like their main eventers? Like, I guarantee if Chuck Liddell had a bad night and pissed hot, like, I guarantee they would hide that urine sample. You know, like, it was all through the UFC, right? All the drug tests.
Well, of course. I mean, there's been multiple times. So they go through the commission, and you have to understand that you're dealing with a lot of money. And so, they're going to either, I think, like, for what was it? When Brock Lesnar fought Mark Hunt,
yeah,
he'd already pissed hot and they let the fight happen anyways, and it was after the fact. Right. There's been a few times that's happened to where, like, you know, the person gets gigged, but they let them fight anyways, and then they deal with the repercussions after the fact. But then I'm sure there's also other times that it just gets buried. I'll be honest, I don't know enough about that one way or the other. I can only talk about my own experience. I mean, you know, you hear things in the grapevine, but regardless of that, like, I can't really say one way or the other.
I think USADA was a necessary evil to come into the UFC to do their drug testing. You got to figure, too, Lorenzo Fertitta, who is the former owner of Zuffa, who owned the UFC, he was on the Nevada State Athletic Commission. That's how he was able to, you know, get into everybody's ears, figure out what they wanted as far as sanctioning the rules, and that's how we got the UFC, the rules set, and get it legalized across the country. It all started because I think Lorenzo Fertitta, he was also on the board that both suspended and got Mike Tyson reinstated. Like, he goes way, way back, deep ties with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Like, I feel like back in the day without USADA, he was able to hide a lot of shit that a lot of fighters would be doing, especially if those fighters are drawing money. I guarantee he was the guy to say, okay, let's throw away that urine test, or let's disregard that.
There, I will say this: there is a lot. There's a lot of hidden baggage in MMA, and not just about drug testing or anything like that. There's a lot of things that are hidden and not given to the public to keep certain stars in a good light, or to ensure that, you know, the company doesn't take a hit for it. And I don't think it's just the UFC, but I know of now, I can't say when I say I know, but I've heard from legitimate sources about some things that would blow your mind, like just genuinely criminal activity. You're just like, but it gets swept under the rug, and it's you know, business as usual. Very, very common in most business, you know, like it just kind of is.
Yeah. I think steroids not only affects, like, obviously it's going to bring out a good performance, and obviously, you know, the side effects to an athlete are, you know, detrimental to the heart, detrimental to so many, like, things of the human body, but also to the sport as well. Like, WWF gets a bad rap for being all steroid wrestlers and steroid out. I brought my girlfriend at the time to an MMA fight. And she's like, oh, they all look steroided out. Like, her first MMA event ever. Like, I think also there it brings not only negativity to the human body, but also to the sport as well. Like, fans will look at it like they look at the WWF and, like, pro wrestling. Like, oh, those are all just fucking steroided out guys. Like, I think there's so many. The cons outweigh the pros when it comes to anabolic steroids and doing steroids and every stuff. And different strokes for different folks. But, like, I just think that, you know, it's just bad for the sport.
I'm going to start off by saying I am not a Tim Sylvia fan at all. Okay?
Right.
But do you remember when Tim Sylvia got busted?
Yeah.
You know why he was doing steroids? And I actually believe his reasoning for doing steroids.
He wanted to look better.
Because then he'd be more marketable, right? Like, right. Do people want these ripped up, shredded beasts? And with gladiatorial, like even when we watch movies, like, you watch the movie Gladiator, how many big fat dudes are in that? Like, they're chiseled monster guys. That's what people aspire, or what they look for their athletes as a whole. Right. So I think that's a part of it. A lot of people aren't even like taking into consideration. Dude, like a guy like Ngannou, like, don't get me wrong, the guy punches like a machine, but look, and I'm not saying he's on steroid. I'm saying his stature makes him that much more marketable and scary because he is a big, solid, ripped up dude. Imagine if he was that size, but he was fat.
Right. But like, there's to the play guy. Devil's advocate, I'm sorry for interrupting you, to play devil's advocate though, Derek Lewis, his heavyweight counterpart, has also made a lot of money and has a lot of followers and got to the heavyweight championship just from being a charismatic guy. And he doesn't have the typical ripped up body. He's funny as fuck. He says, my balls are high. Like, it's hilarious. Like, he makes money just being Derek Lewis. I think the connotation that you have to be jacked and ripped to the gills, I think that's thrown out the window when it comes to charisma. Don't you think?
Oh, I agree with that. But I'm saying that is a part of it. Like, and you got to take everything. Look, performance is obviously going to be the first thing you're looking for, right? Like, right. When everything is said and done, you want an edge on strength and speed and the ability. And a lot of guys just do steroids to get through camps. Like, dude, when you the amount of stress you put on your body, I'll tell you, at 43, I cannot do, even if I was on steroids, I could not do what I did when I was in my 20s.
Right.
It's in like the amount of load that you put your body through on 3 days, it's really, really difficult. Correct. And you're going to figure out some way to do it. And whether it's, you know, growth hormone or EPO or whatever the designer steroid is going to get you through it, you're more than likely going to do that just to get through your training regimen. Now, then you're also going to be a little faster. You're also going to be a little stronger. But I will say this, steroids do not make a fighter. You have to be able to fight. You have to have a skill set. Like Anderson Silva got busted. Anderson is a gangster no matter what. It wasn't the steroids that won him all those championships. It was Anderson Silva that won those championships.
Right. I absolutely agree with you. And just like you said, steroids does not teach you how to fight. I mean, I've seen bodybuilders go into the gym for their first class of jiu-jitsu and get tapped out by that 90-pound girl who's a blue belt and get fucking dollywop and tapped out 20 times within a minute. Like, you know, steroids obviously is not going to make you a better fighter. And everyone has different reasoning. And to your point, too, even on the AMIs and training, like, it's time-consuming. You're always stressed out. You're worried that opponent is in the back of your head. The crowd, you know, it's just so many things mentally that's going on and physically, too. Like, going to that ice bath every single night after doing 2-a-days and 3 days, even from the AMIs, because I never was on your level, Gabe, and I never will be. But, like, even from an amateur standpoint, being in the fight game is so fucking physically brutal. And it was mental and physical torment. just to achieve this one goal and for pennies. You know, people are not paid that much. And in order to get to the top, you're going to have to, you know, win your fights in order to get that big payday if you want to pursue this as a dream and a career at the same time. So I see it from your perspective too.
Well, but then also understand that once you get there, you want to stay there, right? And there's going to be all these hungry lions that are coming to take that spot. So you're going to do what you can to ensure that you get there. And designer steroids are a great way to ensure that you can do that without also, you know, getting caught up in the testing.
Gotcha. So our two guests have not responded. Obviously, they have busy training schedules and everything like that. Try to fit them in. Unfortunately, it's not happening. So, you know, I'm just going to talk to Gabe, which is just as good as talking to two awesome fighters. So, we're just going to keep it. Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah.
Dude, are you kidding me? Those guys are in the game right now, putting it down. Go ahead.
No, I've been bothering Gabe and bothering production and everything like that for an Ask Gabe episode. This is talking shit about like the old days. So like finally I get my wish. So cheers on that.
Hey, ask away. If it's in my power to answer it, I will give it to you.
Gotcha. So was Dana White always a dick, or they like, you know, how was doing business with Dana?
You know what? I actually like Dana. I hate to, like, I ran into Dana a few times and he's always been very, very friendly. But he is 100% a businessman, and there has been a complete persona change as he's gotten bigger and bigger. He can be a nice guy. He's shrewd as shit. And if he doesn't like you, he will make your life fucking hell. But he can be personable. I remember I ran into Dana at the Hard Rock. We were both just happened to be in the Hard Rock, and we sat and talked for about 10 minutes and, you know, very, very friendly and just like, you know, running into another associate. You know what I mean? He's not a friend of mine, but we just talked about random shit. It wasn't even in that respect. I think I've actually talked shit about Dana. But when it's all said and done, I just know who Dana is, right? Like he's about the business. And he's put in the position that he's in for, you know, for a reason. I think he can absolutely be a prick though.
Yeah. I ran into him once and he was actually a really nice guy. John Dunze Howard actually fought out of Wakru, and that's a gym I trained at briefly when I lived in Boston. And UFC was in town for UFC in Boston, Rampator fighting James Toney. Fucking awesome. He was in town. Oh, you did?
I fought on that card. I got beat up by Joe Lozano in that fight. Yeah.
Oh my God, it's a small world after all. But like briefly ran into him, and like it was somewhere on the street right by Austin. Like Austin and Boston are like kind of like connected to each other. So ran to him briefly. I'm like, hey, good to see you. Like it seems like he's a super personable guy to fans and everything like that, but he has such a reputation as a business guy of being so cutthroat with contracts, with money, take it or leave it. Nobody's bigger than the sport. No one's bigger than me. Like he gets that reputation. And somebody just tweeted out this girl that fought on the last fight card that after it was all said and done, she didn't get a payment bonus. She didn't get a knockout bonus. And in her bank account, it said, hey, Monday morning, my bank account's now at $17 after having a excellent win this weekend after fighting. Now I have $17 in my bank account. And she tweeted that to Dana and no response or anything like that. Like he always has this persona coming across as, and you saw glimpses of that in Ultimate Fighter season one and negotiating. Oh my God. The videos of him negotiating with Fedor Emelianenko and M1, it was glaring of how much of a dick he can be when it comes to business.
Yeah, crazy. Well, the other part is right now, Dana's just a figurehead. People think like you're doing business with Dana. He was hired by the company that owns the UFC. They pay him a salary. I mean, he's part of it. I mean, there's no denying that he is a part, but like most, I guarantee you, he doesn't do negotiations. Like maybe like someone like a Conor McGregor or, you know, like the top tier stars, maybe. But I guarantee you, most of the people when it comes to negotiating, have no talk, like there's no back and forth with Dana. I mean, again, he's a figurehead in a lot of the ways. You know what I mean? Like, but I will say he can be a very, very shrewd man.
Who was negotiating your contracts? Did you go through Dana, or did you go through like Eddie Bravo, who was the matchmaker, or who'd you go through?
Eddie Bravo. Eddie Bravo's never done anything for the company. He did a play-by-play for a while.
I'm thinking of the wrong name. Sorry.
Joe Silva.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry about that.
And I'll tell you, here's a perfect example is they asked me to fight Joe Lozano on 2 weeks' notice at that fight you were talking about. And I go, look, I haven't trained in a month and a half. And I'm doing this on a 2 week notice. Can I get a little extra money? And my manager called up Joe Silva. And Joe Silva said, I've got four other guys on the call right now. Fuck you, basically.
Really?
Take it or leave it. Yeah. I mean, they're very, very shrewd about that stuff. Very, very shrewd. I'll tell you that on the Ultimate Fighter, they sent me a contract that was about this thick. And the producer I was talking to goes, that contract right there is complete shit and does nothing for you. I'm telling you that right now. Have every attorney you want look at it. Have your manager look at it. Have your mom look at it. Have all your friends look at it. If you want anything changed in it, understand right now it's a no, and we'll go with somebody else.
Right.
And that's how they do business. And you know what? I brought that up to a friend of mine who is, at the time, I think he was like a 6-12 fighter. And he goes, I would have fought. And I go, I know. And that's why, yeah. He's like, I would have taken that in a heartbeat. I of course you would have. And that's why they can do that. There's always somebody else that wants that and will take pennies for it.
And there's no other players in the space. The UFC blew up with the Ultimate Fighter. So UFC was obviously a well-known name. The only one that make any sort of headway in the United States was Elite XC when they were on CBS and got the highest ratings with Kimbo Slice. But that whole company was circled around Kimbo Slice. So the dominoes fell right when Kimbo Slice did. So, like, you know, they completely did not know how to market it.
I used to go to the Elite XC's office, and they were spending money like they were like the biggest time company of all. Like, they were expending money so much that it was no way that it was going to be viable. I remember going to their company headquarters in downtown LA and being like, or not downtown LA, but in Hollywood, going like, the office space alone must have been $400,000 a month. Like, just
right.
They were spending a lot of money.
Correct. But also, that was to attract big names, right? Like, that was to get, you know, notoriety. That was to compete with the UFC. Yeah. You had to spend that much money because UFC was so far along in the game. You know, if anyone was going to be competitive, like Affliction was the one that spent a shit ton of money. Like, Donald Trump fucking backed that shit. Like, you know, you had to spend a lot of money to compete.
They paid Donald Trump to be there.
No, really?
Yeah. the whole idea was, so Trump is exceptional at marketing Donald Trump. And they paid him to be there. And like, genuinely, like dude, this is common knowledge. Yeah. Trump was paid an appearance fee.
Oh my fucking God. Are you serious?
Yeah.
What is that about to do with fucking, oh my God, that's fucking insane. You gotta be shitting me.
Dude, look it up.
I thought he was a money backer. I thought he was backing Affliction.
Dude, Donald Trump is only good at marketing Donald Trump. Like, honestly, yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Like that whole thing is he became as like, oh, I might do some stuff. No. He was there expressly. They paid him to make an appearance.
Do we have Shoni Carter?
Is that Shoni Carter?
Yes, it is.
Oh, shit.
What's going on, brother? Oh, he just dropped. Oh, no.
And like a thief in the night, poof, he's gone.
We just got him for 2 seconds.
That was amazing. Talk about an interlude.
2 seconds of my life.
Yeah.
I can't believe that.
It's true.
So, yeah. So it was kind of like K1 Dynamite when they came to the United States in 2007 when Royce Gracie fought Soccer Robert for the second time and Brock Lesnar fought Kim Cho, whatever. And they paid Dennis Rodman, kind of like that, right?
I was supposed to fight on that card. I was supposed to fight on that card too.
That card was like you couldn't have promoted it worse. Nobody showed up. Nobody bought tickets.
Here's an interesting piece of that. The California Athletic Commissioner at that point, I can't think of his name. But he was making it very, very difficult for people to get licensed for that event. He made everyone jump through hoops, and he declined my license because of the Ultimate Fighter, and that's why I didn't fight on that card. He said because I needed a psychological evaluation.
For what? That makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, you would think so. And then I think Tony's coming back.
Oh, Tony! Oh.
There you are.
What's up, baby?
Man, I've been hearing all types of crazy. Yeah.
What's going on, brother?
Everything. I'm making masks.
No, you heard about the mask last time.
Yo, those look dope.
Wait a minute. You ain't seen this one. This one here.
Let me see that one. Goddamn. The international pimp making international masks. That's fucking awesome, brother.
Hey, what are you doing? So it's been this whole thing.